Sam yelling at people not even ready to go for the show. Circa Las Vegas, Stadium Swim on a Thursday. It's our Thursday home. We're back at the pool. Last week we were at Radio Row. 30 radio stations were in town for the ultimate contest weekend. Danny Smythe is here with us. Mateo as well. Jared is back in the studio getting snapped at. What's up, Jared? How you doing, buddy?
I'm alive. I'm doing all right. What's going on?
We talked about your staff yesterday and who everyone works for. So Danny, one of your guys, is here with us. Were you doing double duty today? Were you working the front desk?
I fill in on the front desk every once in a while. I'm just trying to help the team, man.
Of course. We all have to be team players. If they needed me to do it, of course I would do it.
Would you?
What's your general approach, if I can speak, on greeting people in person? Do you pick your head up and say hi, and you're big on that?
I say howdy. Howdy is the correct thing to say if you're a Midwestern boy.
Okay.
Howdy. How you doing?
I like that. I like that a lot. But eye contact's important.
Oh, am I bad at that?
No. I'm not going to comment on other people at the front desk. I never get a hi, but I give off like grump vibes, so I think they just gave up a long time ago.
I'd say that people have realized the grump is more focus. You're internally focused.
I hope. When I first got to Lotus in 2004, I cannot remember the lady's name, but she was Miss Repeat Yourself. Whatever you said, she'd go, sorry? So I got to the point, Danny, where I'd walk in and I'd be like, how are you doing? Sorry? I'm like, okay, now there's something going on here.
There would be a lot of, oh, never mind, don't worry about it. There would be a lot of that coming from me. If there's one person, yeah. After like four or five times of saying hi, hello, whatever, good morning, and every single time it's met with, huh, I didn't hear you, what'd you say? That's one of those things where, I'll catch you later.
I think people like you, though, so I think I would guess for the most part you get good greetings.
Yeah. Yeah, every time after the show I say good morning to whoever's working the front desk, and it's usually met with either hi or good morning.
Nice. Very nice. We're out here to talk a lot about what's going on this weekend for college football. We'll tell you about a big LSU party that's going down here. SC fans are welcome as well. I don't know if you want to specifically be at the LSU party, but on property. We got Circa Million and Circa Survivor to talk about, so we're going to get to all of that in just a couple of minutes. But the reason I bring up Jared's gig as the front desk person for 5 minutes a week, right, is there are stories in the past about certain coaches being just hell on wheels, hellish to either their secretary or the person who is the greeter at the front desk. And it brings me to Bill Belichick. I have no idea what Belichick was like around the office with the Patriots. I know the last 5 or 6 years, something happened with his scouting. It was awful. The Patriots are in this weird position. We're going to tell you about who they named their starting quarterback today. But, you know, I often talk about the tree that is Belichick, but it actually goes up to Bill Parcells. And then it branches out to friends like Tony La Russa and Bobby Knight. And if you remember Bob Knight, amongst his many attacks and outbursts, you know, these are all guys who were like, discipline, loyalty, accountability. And then you look at all of them, you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You? Knight was legendary for at one point getting pissed off at the secretary and throwing a vase against the wall over her head. Chip Kelly technically is part of the Belichick and Parcells. You know, you move a little further down the tree, he's part of it. He was renowned at the Eagles facility for, like, literally never saying hi to anyone. And I like that Jared backed me up on the steely focus of a Steve Cofield. Sometimes I just don't know what's going on. I actually, you know what's funny? Last night at the Barry Odom radio show, I did it to Coach Odom, like, 6 times. Because I wasn't on the show, but I was working on some technical stuff. And he'd, like, look at me and be like, go to give me a fist. And I'm like, what? Oh yeah, that's right. I have to greet you.
Hyper-focused.
I'm into it.
Well, that's much better than just flat-out ignoring or being disrespectful about it. But we know that you're focused, especially in that.
Don't defend me. Don't defend me.
All right, I won't. All right, Steve Cofield's a bad person. He doesn't say hello.
I mean, I could be. But I like that you're being fair, and we should be fair to Belichick. I think Belichick's going to be a hoot this year.
Oh, yeah,
I think Belichick, if he's with this lady for good, this 24-year-old, I think he's been in a great mood all the time. If not, then I think he'll be working the recruiting trail for new women. I think he's going to be real engaging. Because you know what happens when you have a breakup, generally, as a guy, I'll say, all of a sudden that gut, you're like, okay, got time to eat healthy, start walking, running, lifting. Like, you change when you need something. And Belichick is going to be a more friendly guy, open his mouth, enunciate, project on TV. I think he'll be much friendlier than he's ever been around NFL people. Because he needs a job. So you're going to see a different Bill Belichick.
Something tells me that he is actually a nice person. He just doesn't like the media, and that's all that we see. We see him at work, either on the field or talking to the media. And with the media, it's generally very short answered. Nine times out of ten, it's grouchy.
I can't guarantee he's a nice person. I think he's a nice person when he needs something, which is a lot of people. Like, we hear that about... What's her name down there? Muffet. What's Kim Mulkey down at LSU. She's heard to be very transactional. If you got something for me, then I got something for you. If you don't, whatever. It doesn't fit my needs. So what the Patriots have been left with is just a moribund situation. They don't have a lot of talent. They drafted Drake May, but they got a weird quarterback deal because I don't think they want to put May on the field early. So they're going to need some sacrificial lambs, except that they played Jacoby Brissett in the preseason. He's now the starter, and he already got hurt. They may be in the market to pick up, like, two of the guys who are cut around the league. Because if they don't want to play Drake May, who the hell is playing? Like, they need to get some guys who are just going to get slaughtered. Now, they don't think they're going to get slaughtered.
Right.
They come in, they're trying out, hey, I can play NFL quarterback. But I think Brissett will go down. And then what?
Do you think it's more of they don't want to start Drake May just because their beginning schedule is very hard?
That, their offensive line is not very good. I also don't think he's ready. I think they had looked at him as a redshirt guy or, you know, whatever, last four game of the season guy.
Yeah.
So they're in a weird position because you're trying to build up a quarterback. You got to get him playing time. That's your base. But they just don't have enough talent because Belichick and company just did not draft well, did not acquire, you know, in free agency well. So there's a mess. I set the over-under next 2 years for win totals, total, right?
Yep.
34 games at 8.5. Over-under. 8.5 total over two seasons.
I'll go over.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
You have to. It's probably too low.
I think
probably should be like 10.5.
This year is going to be rough, but I think next year they'll be all right. They'll win.
Okay. Well, so you think May develops and then they got some hope.
So this year I actually took them to go 0-5 through 5 games at +220. So I'm looking forward to that because, like I just mentioned, they have a very rough schedule. The easiest team on their schedule is Seattle. So it's going to be a tough start for Jacoby Brissett if he makes it through all 5 games.
So that's one of the quarterback moves. We have ones that are a little more relevant. I mean, every NFL team is relevant, but the Patriots are going to go with Jacoby Brissett. Do what you want with that. Fade him early. Play him early. Maybe that's the best they're going to be at quarterback all year long. We got college football week one, like real week one is here. We got a big slate tonight that we're going to get into. On the way back, we're going to talk to our college football insider, Michael Felder from In the Bleachers on Twitter, Learfield, and Bleacher Report is with us. Stick around.
Live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas,
it's Cofield and Company.
Thursday means beginning of the college football week. Week one, big slate tonight. Good games. We'll break them down with experts along the way. One of our experts on Thursdays is Michael Felder from Learfield and Bleacher Report. He does a great podcast about gardening and football. Seriously. Hand in the dirt. I talked to Michael just a few minutes ago. We started off this part of the conversation mentioning FBS teams are going to be taking on FCS teams. I think some of the FBS teams are not going to be ready. There's going to be some close games and some upsets.
No, I think you're right about that. I'm very curious to watch what happens. Obviously, we just got through the week zero, the Del State like debacle. Although I will say this, they covered. They did cover. They were a 39.5 point dog, and they missed their flight to Hawaii, and then they still got on another flight. They had to split the team up, and guess what? They showed up at Hawaii, and they covered. And covering is good. Good teams cover. And so I look at that, and I don't know if it's whether – I don't think it's going to be New Hampshire against UCF. I don't think it's going to be Murray State against Mizzou. I think Mizzou's going to be very good this year. But when you start to get into, like, the nitty-gritty of it, when we start to get into the Saturday of it all, I think I'm very curious to watch what we see, like Towson, Cincinnati. What does that look like? I'm curious to see. Oh my God. It's in, they're not FCS, but this Akron game against Ohio State, because we don't know what Ohio State's going to look like. And Ohio State, I don't believe Ohio State knows what they're going to look like either. So there's a lot of games on the board that are going to be really interesting to see. Kennesaw State, UTSA is another one of them. So there's a lot out there. It just, you got to listen, you got to be smart with the money. But the reality of it is, Cofield, you, like, there are opportunities. Sam Houston and Rice, by the way, that's another one I'd put on my board.
Yep, yep. Yeah, it's a good chance for the little guy to rise up and take out a supposed Goliath, especially if the big boy is not ready. So, listen, Georgia Tech is not a little guy. And for, you know, for them, FSU is not Goliath. Sure. But that was a really good win. Can I tell you, coming out of that, first of all, my narratives are good for the ACC. It's going to have some depth. It's going to be competitive. The other one is Florida State season is not over. That's why we have the playoffs now. Now, they're going to have a hell of a run, but what does FSU have the rest of the way? Can they do it? Can they, you know, finish the season with maybe two wins on their ledger and make the back end of the playoffs? I'm sorry, two losses on their ledger. Not two wins, two losses on their ledger and make the back end of the playoffs.
I think they can with two. If they have two losses, but they win the ACC, obviously they're going to automatically be in. And so you look at their schedule, and I'm pulling it up right now. They have BC. I think this is the game that's the most important game, because if they lose to BC, people are going to quit on them forever. So BC is important. They play Memphis. Memphis is another team that's going to be really interesting, because Memphis has an opportunity to do some really interesting things this year. But they play Cal with Jay Knott. Who you guys are a lot more familiar with on the West Coast. Like, Jay Knott's a really good running back. I think he's probably maybe one or two running back in the ACC with either tied with or right behind Omarion Hampton. So they play SMU. SMU did not look that good coming out of the gate. They did not. Rhett Lashley didn't look very – that team didn't look good. They played Clemson. They played Duke. Duke's a team that's going to be really interesting. And then you throw in UNC, Miami. Miami, a lot of folks, now that FSU lost, Miami's a team that a lot of people are starting to, like, hang their hats on. And I'm not there yet. I want to see what they look like coming out of the gate when they play Florida, which is a game that I know we're going to get to. And then Notre Dame. So it's not going to be easy for Florida State, but the big thing for me with respect to Florida State is they have a chance. They have an opportunity. If you're the ACC, though, to take it from FSU to expand it kind of big picture, the ACC wants to get two teams into the playoff. We know that the Big Ten and the SEC are going to get three teams into the playoff. We know that. We already – that's understood and understand. And the ACC is hoping to get two so that the Big 12 only gets one. And then everybody else is battling for it, especially when you throw in Notre Dame. So this is going to be a really – this season, look, this is an exercise that we've never had to do before, and now they've got to figure it out.
Michael Felder from Learfield is up on Cofield & Company here on a Thursday. All right, well, let's get right to a Saturday game. I want to talk about a Friday game in a second, but let's mention Miami and Florida. It's on the road. The Hurricanes are favored. I think Cam Ward is tremendous. I think his backup is very good too. But – a quarterback can really change things for a program. And really, for me, Miami just needs consistency. And maybe the most consistency is from the head coach position. So what are they going to do in this game?
Man, see, I just wish you just would have just stuck to Cam Ward. I think he is tremendous. I got a chance to talk to him at ACC football kickoff, and it was just he's a delight. Truly, like, he's someone that you want to talk to. He's someone that understands it. And I'll juxtapose these things. Right, where Florida State did not bring DJ Uiagalelei to ACC kickoff. And I talked to some Florida State fans. They're like, well, we brought these guys, and DJ said he didn't want to take away from their spotlight. I was like, hey, man, you can bring as many players as you want. Like, you could bring more guys. Just, like, put him on the bus, too. Put him on the plane, too. And they didn't, which I don't think that they lost because of DJ. I think Florida State lost because they could not run the ball and they couldn't stop the run either. But to go back to Cam Ward, they brought – Miami brought Cam Ward. And I'll tell you what, that dude showed up. He got the shiny suit on. He looked good. He was ready to rock and roll. This is a guy from Incarnate Word to obviously to Washington State. He showed up and he knew what the job, he understood the assignment, and to watch him play was so fun in the Pac-12. And I've heard multiple people say that Cam Ward is probably the guy that Mike Norvell wanted, didn't get. He goes to Miami, and so I want to see him show his butt off at Miami. And in Miami, we're going to play this Florida team. You're in Vegas. You know that Billy Napier is the odds-on favorite to be the first coach fired this year, right? Even if they're not that good, they're better than them. So go out and win a game, build some momentum, and then Miami, maybe they end up in Charlotte at the end of the year.
All right, let's go right to the top of the card. Michael Felder is with us. Is Clemson actually two touchdowns worse than Georgia?
I think so. Really? I like Antonio Williams. Bryant Westcott, I like him too. Phil Maffa, yes. These are all the positives for Clemson that I'm giving you. Kate Klubnik, oh my God, nice guy. He made a video for my next door neighbor who they both went to Clemson. He made a video for them. He's a nice guy. Kirby Smart's team has got, they have so much dog in them. And I don't know if Clemson's bringing that same amount, right? Like, what do you call it? Sand in your pants? Like, I don't know if they're going to bring that same amount to the table. And the biggest thing for me, so there's two things. We spent a lot of time talking about this. We spent a lot of time talking about how, because I just saw a Martavis Bryant video. Very good Clemson receiver. Sammy Watkins, Nuke Hopkins. You get to Mike Williams. They don't have that right now. They hope they get it with Antonio Williams and the Westcott kid. They hope they get it, but they don't have it right now. But the big thing for me is I think about Christian Wilkins. I think about Grady Jarrett. I think about Cleveland Farrell. Like, Cleveland Farrell, not a great NFL player, but a very good college football player. You think about all those things, and I just think that Clemson is very good in the back end. I'll tell you what, the back end don't get you against Georgia. Back end don't get you tackles before 5-7 yards. If you're going to give them 5 or 7 yards every play, they'll just do that all day. Look at that. That's a rhyme. I made that one up. So that's the thing I'm looking at. That's the thing I'm worried about. I'm worried about their front seven. I'm glad they have Barrett Carter. And some folks are calling Barrett Carter a defensive end. I think he's still a linebacker. But he's going to have to pull double duty, and he's also going to have to get folks lined up. And that's the part that's going to be really hard for him. I like Kay Klubnik. I like their wide receiving core. I don't know their offensive line is going to be ready. So this is a game, if Clemson can keep it within one score going into the back end, going into the fourth quarter, then yes, they've got a great opportunity. But if Georgia comes out, and you know, it's like, it's a big brother, little brother thing, right? Where like if Georgia comes out, it just puts their face in the dirt early. I think they're done.
Well, speaking of dirt, Michael Felder does the Hand in the Dirt podcast, and I know you did a live show last week. In your area. Why do I see a photo with you on stage with your shirt off?
Hey, man, hey, get it right, get it tight. You know what I'm saying? No, we had a good show. Shows in Raleigh. And I. They were talking to me. They gassed me up. I took my shirt off, but this shirt was always – I was always going to pop the top. Literally, I'm getting ready to go for a run after we do this, and I'm going to pop the top, man. I'm going to do it. Like, that's what I do, man. I like having no shirt on. I already got the sunscreen out, so I'm ready to rock and roll.
Nice, nice. We'll use pop the top. Can Texas A&M do that to Notre Dame and just blow them off the field?
Ooh, but wow, whoa, look at me. I'm in the Matrix right now. Blow them off the field.
Well, those, I'm sure in college, that's their expectation. Ooh. Is to take the Irish and put their face in the dirt.
A&M is not good.
Ooh, okay.
I understand they lost some good offensive linemen, some offensive pieces at Notre Dame. But the reality for me is, why do you think you have a new coach at Texas A&M? Why do you think you had to go and spend, what did they spend, $85 million to get a new guy? I wish some job would spend $85 million on me.
Get rid of me.
Because I wasn't good. Yeah. Sure. Notre Dame is a very well-coached, well-focused football team. They're bringing in a quarterback, and we're going to see what Riley Leonard looks like, but they're bringing in a very good quarterback, a better quarterback than Texas A&M has, and we're going to see what this looks like. I think Notre Dame wins in a very – in a tight game, a game where, yes, A&M has some better players in positions, but A&M's entire experiment under Jimbo Fisher did not work.
Wow.
So let's see what happens now.
Michael Felder's with us. What is Upside Down Pizza?
Oh, man. Upside Down Pizza is super cool, and I think you'll like it because it's also very easy. So you take, you know, your pepperonis, your onions, your mushrooms, whatever you want. You take those. I put some Hatch chilies on there. You put those on the bottom of a cast iron skillet. Then you throw your cheese on there, all in a cast iron. Then you throw in your sauce. Then you put your dough on the top part, put it all in there. All that goes in, flip it over, cook it, done. Bang.
I appreciate the fact that Michael Felder basically gives away his recipes. I don't think you give away all your secrets, but I will tell you that if I needed someone to spy outside your house and get all the secrets, I know who it is. It's Connor Stallions.
Yeah.
Have you seen this documentary yet? I'm about halfway through.
I haven't started it yet.
The setup's amazing. Like, he is pitched as just this genius, but I also get the feeling that they're like, everyone was doing it. It feels a lot like the, almost like a Barry Bonds story, where like, yes, everyone was cheating and Harbaugh wasn't keeping up with the times, and then he got the best drug or cheater.
Yes.
Or let's not say cheater, because everyone was doing it in Connor Stallions. But it's quite the story of like how he helped rebuild the program. But I just wonder now, let's move forward here on this. Because
hang on.
Yeah, good.
How do you feel about the tablets? The tablets and the helmet comms?
Oh, that he essentially and Michigan ushered in this new era?
Yes, exactly. Like, I think
it's amazing. I think it's amazing. And I'll tell you know, I cover UNLV football. I still believe, and I have no confirmation on this, I still believe that Michigan had some of UNLV's intel. When they went there last year and they were competitive and then kind of got, you know, they pulled away from them. I think they fostered that change big time, and that's going to change college football, but for the good. Now we don't have to spend so much time having spies and having nine guys on the sidelines and seven dummies sending in signals. And then one guy's the real guy. The second guy's the other play guy. Like,
no, it's nuts. My, one of my best friends was actually one of those, like he had the red wristband, you know, you see what I'm saying? Like doing the whole deal. Yeah, we were flying. One of my best friends did that, and he was like, man, this is going to be really rough because these guys, now the defense, the helmet comms are going to be really good for offense. Tablets are going to be really good for defense. And that's going to be the most interesting part of college football. That's what I'm watching for the most this year.
Yeah, I watched the UNLV try it out in the bowl game they had in Phoenix against Kansas. It's pretty intense with the tablets. I mean, they get them out quickly, and then they're like, I don't think I could process the tablet. And as a coach, I'd be like, and I'd throw it. I'd be like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Okay, so let's move forward. There's a lot of stuff swirling around in Michigan now. But honestly, Sherrone Moore and the rest of the staff, they bought into this whole thing the last couple of years. So unfortunately, now they're going to have to pay the price and the distractions. We have an opportunity here. Either Fresno State is going to play a good game because of the distracted Wolverines, or we've got a line that is way too low. Michigan's only 21 against Fresno State. What happens with Michigan this week?
That's one of the games. So you can see I got my board. I got my early board right here.
There it is.
That's one of my games that I just have. That's a 7 o'clock game. It's a 7:30 game. Excuse me. That's on NBC. Listen, not having Tedford, does that suck? Yes, absolutely. But the big thing for me is I still think this team has him in their DNA. And he's a guy, and listen, it sucks for them to not have Jeff Tedford, because he's a guy that when I was doing the opening, when I was working, getting a chance to watch him talk about defense is important. But also, you know that Tim Skipper, hey, they practice against each other every day. And so what we're dealing with is a guy who watched a mastermind. So how do I learn these tricks? So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they shake things out. I am a huge, like, I want him to be healthy. I want him to be back coaching, honestly. But in the meantime, we'll figure it out. And against Michigan, Michigan also has a new head coach. And having two new coaches is going to be really interesting.
It's felder.substack.com. Subscribe now. I do. It's a great package of stories and podcast, audio and video. It really is dynamite. Michael, enjoy the weekend. It's going to be crazy, and I'll talk to you next week.
Yesterday, we missed the show because I had to travel up to ESPN's campus to do a town hall type event with a bunch of journalists. And
now, back to Cofield and Company, live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
It was a good time. It was great to see everybody. I'll tell you what, I love the people that are running ESPN right now. I loved Reorg, and it was a blast all the way up until he said, journalistic standards.
Look at Danny smiling. Laughter is contagious. Pat McAfee, well, a couple things going on there. First of all, he invented this medium. We know that. He's great. Although we've used that gorilla's laugh many times, basically either against me or on my behalf, especially after the rare Patriots loss during the dynasty. I would love to open a show for like 2 minutes. I don't mean it's a wish. We've done it. So something was going on there. We're going to examine it in about 8 minutes. I don't really know what the bit is. I think a lot of it is classic radio behemoth in terms of the strength they feel, basically telling management, go F yourself.
Yeah.
There's interesting developments going on here with McAfee. I don't know if he was drunk and vomiting, and I saw him partying last week during week zero, so it's a bunch of stuff to get into. I'm not sure if EP is a fan of it. And I think it's a mixed bag in the audience. But, you know, it's funny. When they announced the McAfee show would be coming to ESPN, I was like, oh, my God, thank you so much. Please have that show follow your show. Danny Smythe is here, the press box, and have that in the middle of our order on local radio, but they didn't do it. So I hope they do it at some point because it garners a lot of attention. And he's making a lot of money, and they're ruffling feathers. I got a giveaway right now. 364-1100, 364-11. 0-0. That was like a big surprise. Oh, hold on. There's a giveaway coming. Tickets to Big Show coming up on September 11th. A couple of tickets to go see Jerry Cantrell of Alice in Chains, Candlebox, and Bush. September 11th, Planet Hollywood, PH Live. Tickets are on sale right now. Ticketmaster.com. 364-1100. It's caller 7. On the way, we will get into McAfee's latest hijinks. Also, the Cowboys' chance to win a Super Bowl because now there's a high-profile dude with a bet on the line. But the prize right now, tickets to the show. You got Bush, Candlebox, and Jerry Cantrell of Alice in Chains. 364-1100.
Live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas,
it's Cofield and Company.
Let's bring in Xavier Pope. I'm going to set something up here, and I have a feeling it's going to flop. But EP, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. How you doing, Steve?
Did you hear the intro there with the soundbite from Antonio Pierce? He said, chasing ghosts and chasing waterfalls. What is it? Are those the same things? What does that mean? I know the song, Chasing Water, right? Wasn't that the name of the song, right, TLC?
Yeah.
Do we have any idea what's going on there, chasing waterfalls and chasing ghosts? Same thing?
I have no idea what he's talking about, Steve. You were in the same boat there.
Did you, did Chasing Waterfalls, did that hit you in any way when it came out? Everyone else on the show is a little younger, so they don't really remember as an adult that song. Do you remember that song?
Yeah, I mean, God rest his soul, the Left Eye, she had a very poignant rap. She's kind of coming out of the water, and so it was just kind of a life lesson It was it's a pretty serious song. You know, it's a hit.
It was, yeah. Looking back on it, it says TLC Chasing Waterfalls refers to dangerous or self-destructive behaviors. I don't want to get too cheesy here, but I remember when that song came out. Let's see what year. I don't know what year it was. But I remember hearing the part about AIDS, and I was like, oh, crap. I'm like, I might want to wrap it up when I'm out and about. I was like, oh, crap. Like back then, that was scary. Really, I mean, it's scary now, too. You don't want to catch anything now. But back then, you were like, I might die.
We have to consider that was after the time that Magic Johnson, I mean, not that long after him coming out and saying that he has HIV and what happened with Karl Malone and all the different things that was about sex education in the early 90s, mid-90s. And so I think that is an offshoot. I was definitely an offshoot of that.
Xavier Pope is with us. You sound smooth today, like you're a little deeper today. I want to talk family. I want to talk family because I thought there was a great family moment in Hard Knocks, which I'll get to here in a second. Tell the Vegas audience who Uncle Vince Black is, because you were sitting with him the other day.
Yeah, see, you saw me, Steve, set that up. My Uncle Vince Black, he's a legendary guitarist. He's played with many bands all around the world, the biggest bands ever. He's a legend. When I'm out with him, people like come up to him and shake his hand. It's wild how many people who know who he is. And so he came out to Chicago to live. After semi-retirement, he just went to play out in the West Coast for a concert. But yeah, I mean, he's just a really cool guy. I love to hang out with him. He has dreadlocks all the way down to the floor, and he sleeps with his guitar.
I love that so much. Just so you know, I'm kind of asking permission, but I may just steal it anyway. I think in the intro of the show, when they say my name, Steve Cofield, I'm going to go with strong as an ox, locks no more, and smooth as butter.
I go ahead, take it, because that's what Uncle Vince is. I'll describe him, and it was interesting to see all the messages I started getting from older women wanting to meet my uncle. The guy's a good-looking guy. I share some of those genes. I was told a lot I looked like him growing up, so I'll take that. But it's amazing how many older women hit on my uncle in open public everywhere we go. Insane.
That's weird. I was told by family members I look like Walter Matthau, so you got it a little better. Yeah, right. So speaking of family, I love Hard Knocks for parts of the show like this. You don't ever want the real story in Hard Knocks to be some injury. And one of the kids who's trying to make the team, he's playing in the last game, he's playing his ass off, he's a running back, Ian Wheeler, and then he freaking tears his ACL.
Yeah.
And then they show his mom kind of freaking out, then his mom's waiting outside the locker room. And just that, like, that hug between mom and kid trying to make the Bears, I thought was just awesome. And it was forever. So you're watching and you're like, the lip starts quivering. You're like, this is great.
Yeah, it's gut-wrenching, Steve. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful slice of life and the reality of what it is to make the National Football League and how people like Ian Wheeler's mom have been with him since he was a kid, going to practices, traveling across the country with him when he was in college. And then being there for him at this time, hoping that he gets the opportunity to change the destiny of his family. And so to see that was gut-wrenching. And to see that moment, though, was something that shows you that this sport, it does impact real people's lives.
Yeah, these are not cartoon characters and people yelling at them or calling them bums or wimps or quitters. That's nonsense. And I thought a great example was, I don't know if every NFL team does this, but you start to wonder, like, okay, are the Bears going to take care of this kid? Is he on his own? I thought Ryan Poles, the GM, talking to him, that was super impressive about, hey, anything you need, kiddo, I'm here.
Yeah, Poles was trending over all of this. I think that he is delivering on the type of organization that you run as a first-class football organization. I haven't seen this many people excited about a GM, a team, the culture around this. I don't think I've ever seen it, Steve. It just seems like people are confident in how the organization is being handled. Just a classy move by Ryan Poles, just showing the type of guy he is.
So the other day on McAfee's show, you saw him talk about the about journalistic. I guess they ended up breaking up into laughter. Yeah,
about journalistic integrity. What do you think the bit was about? And what do you think of McAfee? I know you commented that it's another version of this bro culture.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's he serves a specific audience, that this white straight male grievance culture. In fact, he's too old to act the way he acts. By the way, and people celebrate him getting wasted and on TV and just being an old douchebag. And so I just think that him coming in and talking to the worldwide leader about what's going on, and him talking about journalistic integrity. You saw Ed Werder talk about, hey, I have journalistic integrity. It means a lot. And for people to attack the profession of journalism, people have gone to school and worked their butts off to be where they are and act like it's nothing because you have a bit that just happened to be popular and makes you money, I think it's just ridiculous and shows how little and low-hanging fruit this type of guy is.
ESPN had to have known that he was like this when they first offered him a spot on their network, right? I mean, through letting him continue to do this, they're basically just saying, we're okay with it, right?
Yeah, I mean, someone commented on my timeline about this earlier today and said that, you know, this is, the country's about capitalism and serving a certain audience. But my refrain to that is, this hasn't always been popular. I mean, and I would willing to say that someone like Jimmy the Greek would not get kicked off the air in 2024. And that's really a shameful way to look at things now in terms of how things have turned back around, in terms of things that were culturally acceptable and things that are not culturally acceptable. And because there's a niche audience, because the internet and how streaming and how audiences have been segmented now, that this is now something that's popular and allows people to reach a different type of audience, regardless of how offensive they may sound.
Xavier Pope is with us, out of Chicago, attorney, cultural contributor to Cofield & Company every Thursday. Yeah, I find it fascinating to watch this clash between the entertainers of our business and the people who are still trying to do journalism. I think they're both very important, but there's absolutely a clash. And then it gets us to what happens when coaches react. Right, so Deion Sanders is reacting to a culture that sometimes can have the entertainers, other times you've got the real journalists there. But the problem with Deion is I don't think he can differentiate. What do you think right now about where he is in terms of the way he's handling the media?
Well, Deion Sanders himself is an entertainer, and yes, he has been dedicated to the game of football, but him being an entertainer also gets him the spotlight to be able to move up in his career. So it's one of those, like, you live by the sword, you die by the sword type of situations. Deion Sanders puts himself in the spotlight by talking big, and then he gets himself in trouble by doing so. He saw what happened, the reaction to how he said his team must be a world-class college football team, and then they wound up sputtering out last year. But the question that he was asked was specifically about him being, if I ask you a question that's negative, are you going to shut me out, based on him shutting out reporters based on CBS and things of that nature? And to me, I said, why would you ask a specific question like that when you can just go and say, what type of things are going to get under your skin, or just something that has a little bit more journalistic integrity instead of something that's meant to spur on this type of reaction from Deion?
Yeah, I think if I was going to ask, I think a better way to say it is a critical question. I would wait until the season when I actually have some material, because otherwise when you go in there and you're like, hey, am I banned or not, you're just playing into his game, so you're giving him what he wants, so why play his game?
Well, I think is it his game, or is it the game of certain reporters who feel like they have to entertain to be able to get clicks and likes and getting shares, get their numbers up, they're getting analytics up so they can get a check too. So there are two sides to that coin. And I think if you want to intentionally provoke him to get an attention, that's something that's a knock on that reporter as well.
Yeah, I think it's a two-way game. I think Deion doesn't really mind the critical stuff because he can film it, or other people are going to put it out, so that lines his pockets as either loved or hated around college football. And you're right, there are people who have the mission of, you know, stirring the pot. And from a columnist standpoint, I'm not a columnist. Well, I kind of am on sports radio. We took their bit, and we do it better, and we actually face the athletes, unlike a lot of these guys. But I'll give credit. Sean Keeler in Denver, he faced them, and for now he's banned. I think it's silly. I don't think anyone should be banned. If you don't want to take a question from someone, then just move on during a press conference. Xavier, last couple of minutes.
Yep.
What is happening with both of the Harrisons now, the junior and senior, the wide receivers with Fanatics? This thing has been going on for a while.
Yeah, I think that the first thing is, if you think about, we talked about this many times on the show, Steve, about athletes attempting to manage and do different things for themselves, and the fact that Marvin Harrison Jr. opting out of the NFLPA licensing so that his jersey can be sold in the store, and then because Fanatics will be involved with it in order to avoid this suit, they've already paid him $110,000, and him coming back and saying, hey, I didn't really sign this, after having benefited from the contract. And then on top of that, saying that my father submits an affidavit saying that I actually signed my name under this, what basically what amounts to a loan out company that was started just before that contract started, which many athletes do, many entertainers do. This was known as a loan out agreement that acts as a separate entity to be able to act for you, to be able to bring some tax benefits, to be able to protect you from some liability. And I think that what the claim was, and there was leave to file an additional claim by Fanatics alleging not just breach of contract, but fraud and putting Marvin Harrison in it, is you use this to circumnavigate getting out of this contract. I think that they've dug themselves a deeper hole in just coming out and admitting, hey, we did this under this strange guise of not necessarily getting ourselves into the contract. I think it was just stunning admission to be able to say something like that.
So, you know, on this show, we talk about food all the time. I talk about prices of food. I talk about fast food. That was a setup that might be going awry.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I think he got cut off there. I was going fast, too.
I don't think he liked the Marvin Harrison talk.
No. I mean, he's an attorney. His take at least fills us in on what the hell is happening here. One of the things I wanted to hit down the stretch here with Xavier, I was never a Capri Sun guy. I don't know if the little squeezy packets were around when even I was a teenager. I don't think they were. And then they came along. Have they been bottling this for a while? Now you can get bottles of Capri Sun?
That I'm not sure. I've only ever had it in the little packages. But I was always weird. I never put it in like the hole up top because I just thought it was too much of a pain. So I would just turn it over and just stab it in the bottom.
Yeah, it's inefficient.
Yeah.
And then you try to do it and then you ruin it. Then the stupid plastic tray would bend. So apparently I just said it wasn't around when I was a kid, but I know a lot about it, so I must have been really into it when I was 20. I don't know.
I mean, full of sugar, why not?
Do they do... I hate to date myself all the time with the age stuff. Do they still do the small pints of milk at schools? Like the paper boxes?
I think so.
Nightmare.
I'd have to ask my stepdaughter.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's why I asked you. You're a parent? Yeah.
Well, most of the time she just packs her own lunch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we just get her drinks and she just puts them in there.
Well, look at you. Yeah. That is the height of efficiency.
Absolutely.
These damn kids needing a lunch. Make it yourself.
Yeah, she makes her own breakfast, makes her own lunch. All right, she's good.
How old is this child?
She is 12.
All right.
Yeah.
Already prepped the babysit. Go ahead and make some money.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. She's got to start doing chores around the house. She gets an allowance.
Start?
Yeah, I mean, she does some here and there.
What do you not like to do that you want the 12-year-old child to take care of?
Dishes.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Me and my fiance have an agreement. She cooks, I do the dishes.
I like that.
I can't cook. Occasionally I'll turn on the grill.
I've heard that.
I'll do that stuff, but I'm not in the kitchen.
You're not on the chef list. We have a great remote coming up on Sunday. Going to be out before USC and LSU and the Modelo Las Vegas Kickoff Classic. Whiskey Stadium is the spot. I'll be out there with ESPN Las Vegas from 2 to 4. ESPN Las Vegas from 2 to 4. Ask about the Sunday deals on Modelo, Modelo Negra, Modelo Oro. They've got a special on the Bloody Maria. It's Whiskey Stadium on Polaris across from the Owl, Legion Stadium. Getting ready for the big game with USC and LSU in town. Sunday, 2 to 4 with Cofield and ESPN Las Vegas.